there are more ways to get the news than I can count on one, even two hands. For some people, you like to get up in the morning, turn on the television, and maybe watch breakfast television or the morning news program, and find out what's happened overnight and what the day has in store for you. Others prefer the 7 o'clock evening news, and still others think the 11 o'clock has the best updates, the most complete news before you go to bed at night. Still others will wake in the morning and will read the paper. And in Coburg, we have a choice of two papers on top of the national publications. Others read the news online or subscribe to particular publications. I use an app on my phone, which searches for stories that are of interest to me. It searches hundreds of publications for these stories, and it sends them to my phone. And then I pick the ones I want to read. But no matter the source, none of us is getting all the news, and all the news that matters is different for each of us. If you're a sports nut, news for you is the latest trade rumor. But you might not like all sports, so you only follow hockey, and perhaps you really only pay attention to one team. In other words, we filter out news and information that we do not think is relevant to us. Our interests and our bias determine what is important and what we spend our time reading or watching or listening to inform us. We watch one network news coverage over another because the stories reported confirm to our interest and bias. And often with news, this might be done based on political affiliations. The reality of it is that we are inundated by news. We will hear one story and receive two different accounts. We'll hear two different truths about one story. Well, which one is true? Who should we trust and where should we turn? These questions, I believe, become more relevant and pointed given the times that we currently live. When the leader of a nation can declare the news to be fake and people believe him, where are we getting our truth? To what narratives about life are we listening to? How do they help us? How do they improve the world? How do they work for God's kingdom? The passage this morning from Micah, it serves as a warning, perhaps primarily to preachers. Be careful of what and how you preach. Be careful of how you are leading God's people. However, it also serves to provide a wider warning to the church and all who seek to lead and counsel, not only God's people, but all people. Because God takes great offense when people are led astray by false motivations. When this happens in the church and outside of these walls, we need to be concerned. Catholic theologian Daniel McGuire observes about Christianity what is true of every faith tradition. From the beginning, there has never been just one Christianity. Multiple Christianities coexist and often conflict at times, irreconcilably so. Moreover, because religion is about power, about the source of life and hope, and about meaning and possibility, such power can be used for greater good or can be misused, thereby causing enormous suffering and harm. If I were to ask you, what does it mean to be a Christian? Each of you may respond differently. Walk down the street to Calvary Baptist, and again, a slightly different answer. Walk further down the street to the United, the Anglican, the Catholic Church, so on. A slightly different answer. Each faith tradition has its own particular focus. None of them wrong. Each representing a piece of the larger picture. Is one answer more correct than the others? The same question could be asked about what does it mean to be a Canadian? What is our national identity? Do I have to play hockey to be a Canadian? Well, I hope not, because I don't play hockey. I like hockey, but I can't play. Or do I have to like the music of the tragically hip Celine Dion and Anne Murray? I can only check one of those boxes. Do I need to be bilingual? I can't check that box. So what does it mean to be a Canadian? What does it mean to be a global citizen? We would answer very differently here, based on an answer we might hear from someone born in an African nation or someone who is from Asia. Those answers would be different. And no answer is wrong. But a critical eye is needed to understand the perspective that is being presented. And part of what Micah is talking about is how easy it is to fall into a rut and get comfortable. Comfortable with the truth that is presented to us. That without critical questioning, we may miss vital opportunities. That without humbling ourselves and our perspective, we may remain blind to another's truth. Barbara Brown Taylor writes, part of that humbling may involve examining the ways in which we are embedded, both individually and collectively, in systems that reward us for our compliance. As long as we keep our confidentiality agreements at work, we can count on our annual bonus. As long as our churches stay out of county politics, we can count on good relationship with our local representatives. While there is nothing inherently wrong with choosing to do either of these things, Micah suggests that there is plenty wrong with making moral decisions based on the benefits we receive from them. Micah is calling for justice and peace, no matter the cost. And can we, as the church, imagine this? If we can, we are heeding Micah's words. If we cannot, then Micah has some things to say to us, and we need to decide if we are listening. Micah writes about prophets that lead the people astray. And in today's world, we might say that prophets no longer belong solely to the religious world, that there are many secular voices that society heralds as prophets. You all know the film Jerry Maguire with Tom Cruise. He's an agent in the sports industry who writes a manifesto. You might call him a prophet, one that wasn't well liked, but you might call that as a secular prophet, someone who points to truth within an industry. And we could point to others in industry, entertainment, and politics who call out wrongs and often pay a price for doing so. It's people who speak truth to power, no matter the personal cost. And then there are those who speak the message that they believe people simply want to hear. Because it placates us, and it makes things seem easy. And individuals do this for the status, the money, the power that comes with it. It is highly self-serving. And this is who Micah rails against. Educator Tom Tate explains that prophets are truth-tellers and mirror-holders more than they are future predictors. Mirrors help us see ourselves. What do we do with those reflections? Prophetic voices rarely garner the support of the powerful in the community, rarely gather dollars from those in corporate and business structures, and rarely find elected officials openly supportive. But by their very nature, prophets push the status quo, challenge the way things are, and set forth a vision of the way things ought to be. Prophets rattle cages and take outlandish action. And Tate's view of a prophet is in line with the prophets of the Old Testament, who, like Micah, held up a mirror to society and asked hard questions. There are many things wrong with the society of which we are a part. The predominant culture is not perfect, and it seems more and more to be self-serving and protectionist. Private interest interferes with the creation of community. And all the while, we isolate ourselves and feed ourselves with information which simply affirms our own point of view. This morning, we remember. This morning, we remember a war which ended almost a century ago. And since then, there have been other wars, conflicts that men and women from nations around the world have felt called to fight. And we create a narrative around these wars of heroes and sacrifice, of terror and triumph. In World War II, we fought against what can only be described as a clear evil, which arose out of Nazi Germany and the genocide of a whole people. And we know that this was wrong, and we participated in that war to stop it. But since then, there have been other genocides. In Rwanda, the world watched as Canadian Lieutenant General Roméo Dallaire was left powerless and without a mandate to intervene. Currently, the Rohingya people in Myanmar are being killed in the thousands, but there is no intervention. It leaves questions unanswered. Are wars no longer fought for ideological reasons of protecting innocence? Are only economic and geopolitical interests enough to merit a war? Do we commit to war for the purpose of revenge or for preemptive strike or to protect people? If we follow the Prince of Peace, but acknowledge that at times conflict may be necessary for the greater good, then what is that greater good? It seems that our narrative has become muddled. We used to know why we fought, and as Christians could justify the action. The overwhelming response of the Presbyterian Church in Canada to World War II was positive. Go and fight. We understood that we should do this, and a former member of this congregation received the highest honor in the Commonwealth for his actions at Dieppe. But today, we aren't so sure. The message isn't as clear. We see issues which should get attention, and nothing seems to happen. And I believe that Micah is speaking to the church today to bring a voice of clarity and morality to the leaders of industry and nations about what is important, about a sustainable planet, the end of exploitation of workers, and the preservation of human rights for all people. And this applies inside of conflict zones and without. We say we will remember them, they who shall not grow old. if we are going to say that, then it has to mean something. It must be more than just empty words. Micah challenges the church to ensure that we don't just give lip service. That God's narrative of peace, justice, and righteousness for all people is preached, not just by me, but also by you. Because it is God who calls you into his kingdom and glory. Thanks be to God. Amen.